Mr. Mayne, would you like to speak briefly?
Thanks, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. I've come over from Australia for this meeting today to support a resolution proposing that we get rid of the dual class structure of our capital base. I also would like Rupert to speak on the other resolutions, but I'll just give you a quick 2 minutes on this resolution. Arthur, could you advise the proxies on this resolution first, please?
Could you get the microphone up a bit so we can all hear you? That's better.
Hang on. Sorry. Could you advise the proxies on this resolution first, please?
Could I?
Advise the proxies. What's the current proxy position? You've got the proxy results up there. Can you inform the meeting what they are?
At the appropriate time, we'll announce the results, yes.
So you can't do it now? But before I speak, I think that this resolution's probably been quite well supported, and I'd just like the meeting to know what the figures are so we can talk to that.
Yes, it was supported by 22.9%, which is 184 million shares, and opposed by 620,900,000.
And did Mr. Malone oppose it or support it, do you know?
If he voted, he certainly would have voted against it, because he has more shares than 184 million.
Right, okay. Well, I guess my point is that if you take out Rupert's shares and Mr. Malone's shares, I think you'll find that that's getting close to 50% of the neutral or independent shares supporting the resolution.
Opposing the resolution, yes.
Sorry, supporting the resolution. I think if you take your shares
out.
So what I'm saying is that I think there's a lot of merit in moving to a one-class stock company, because all of us B-class shareholders aren't currently in the S&P 500. So when Rupert first proposed the move from America, the big selling point for us Australians was that we'd all get our stock in the S&P 500. But under the S&P's rules, only the most populous stock is allowed in the index. So that's the non-voting shares. So all of us shareholders are sitting here with voting shares that aren't represented in the S&P 500 index. So the simple argument would be that if we went to a one-class stock company, we would have a billion shares added to the index, and we'd get a re-rating. So, and I guess the argument goes is that now that Malone is off the register, we don't really need, well, Rupert doesn't need to be so paranoid about someone taking the company over. I mean, Rupert is an absolute legend. He's the longest-serving CEO in the world. He's done 55 years straight. He's an amazing guy. No one's going to sack him. And the paranoia of having a two-class company is that Rupert's basically saying, I don't trust my shareholders. I think they might vote me out. And we all suffer a lower share price for that. I mean, if we had one vote, one share, rather than a gerrymander which sees 70% of the shares on issue not have the vote, then sure, Rupert would come down to 15% from the 40% that he'll have post the Malone deal, but that would actually cause a re-rating of the stock price. So I'm actually proposing something that would make Rupert probably $1 billion. I mean, the shares would probably go from 26 Australian to 30 Australian, because we'd instantly get a takeover premium price into the stock. We get the index re-weighting of having the B-class shares in the index. And Rupert could actually stand there and say, I stand here on my record. I don't need to hide behind a gerrymander where only 30% of the stock on issue has the vote. So I'm simply saying to you, Rupert, stand on your record. Trust yourself. You're not going to get the sack. No one's going to take you over. The company's worth $60 billion. Malone is neutralised. You've bought the Wall Street Journal. We now tell everyone else how to behave with the Wall Street Journal, but we're running a capital structure which is frankly embarrassing, which is a gerrymander. And look at what's happened to the New York Times over the last 2 years. They've suffered a fairly substantial campaign against them on this very point, saying don't have a dual class structure. So if we are trying to take on the New York Times with the Wall Street Journal, let's make the first move and let's go to the corporate governance high ground and actually go one vote, one value. I mean, Frank Lowy, who's the third richest bloke in Australia, did that 3 years ago. The guy behind Westfield, the world's biggest shopping centre company. Okay, he went down from 30% to 10%. No one's taken him over. No one's sacked him. He's still there. Shares have been re-rated. So I simply say, Rupert, trust yourself. Back your record. You're a legend. You've had a great career. No one's going to sack you. So why not? You're supporting Evelyn's resolution, which is terrific. which is basically Malone's gone, therefore we'll put ourselves up for election every year. So why don't you go one vote, one value, and actually make yourself another $1 billion?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, based upon the proxies already received, I'm happy to inform the meeting that a majority of the votes cast have already been voted in favour of the re-election of each of the directors nominated. In favour of the ratification of the appointment of Ernst & Young LLP, against the stockholder proposal regarding the annual election of directors, and against the stockholder proposal regarding the elimination of the company's dual class capital structure. Thank you all very much for your support and your interest.
I've got a question, some questions on the individual directors.
Can you just hold up a little while?
Yeah.
Oh, on the direction?
On the directors, yes.
The electors, we've declared them.
You haven't asked for any questions on the election of directors.
Go ahead. I can tell you, if you want the votes, I can tell you.
Gentlemen, I have to say, you're running a slightly unusual AGM here. We have an agenda. The first of which is the election of five different directors. Now, normally, wouldn't you say, we're now dealing with the first director, I'm up for election, I'll hand over to a neutral chair because this concerns me, are there any questions, let's talk about the proxies, and let's have a vote. Now, I know I'm from Australia and it might be different here, but isn't that a normal way to do it rather than to say...
Yes, but if you would speak for 3 minutes, go ahead.
Well, I've got questions on some of the different directors who are up for election, and you're first on the ballot. So my first question for you, Chairman, is when were you last elected?
I imagine 3 years ago.
That's right. 3 years ago when we did the reincorporation as part of the vote, the shareholders elected the slate of directors, including Rupert.
But you went for many, many years in Australia without a regular election. And when I asked you 2 years ago when you were last elected, you said you couldn't remember because you didn't have to be elected in Australia. Now, I don't ever recall you being elected at the annual meeting 3 years ago. As far as I'm concerned, I can't find any records of you ever being elected. Now, 2 years ago when I asked you, you said you didn't remember. Now you're saying it happened 3 years ago.
Which is right. Can answer you that.
Why did Rupert say he had never been elected 2 years ago if you're saying he was elected 3 years ago?
I didn't say I'd never been elected. I said I didn't recall.
Right. And not only that, it didn't happen at an annual meeting. It happened as part of the special vote for the reincorporation.
So the whole board was re-elected as part of the move to America. But in regular AGM three-year terms, Chairman, when were you last elected?
At that time.
No.
I was regular for 3 years.
In regular AGM, have you ever been elected in regular AGMs? You've been CEO for 55 years of a publicly listed company. Have you ever been elected as a director?
Mr. Jacobs.
Or re-elected as a director?
Can you answer that, Mr. Jacobs?
I think I thought I should say something.
At the time of the reincorporation, which occurred in November of 2004, if you look at page 87 of the information memorandum, you will see that each of the directors that were then serving as directors of the Australian company were elected in three different classes. Mr. Murdoch was part of a class one director that was to serve until the third annual meeting succeeding the reincorporation. 3 years did not elapse until this meeting date. So consequently, he was elected as part of the reincorporation procedure in November of 2004. This is the first annual meeting that is required to stand for election, and he has done so.
Thank you, Arthur. Now, we've established that Rupert was elected as a director when we reincorporated to America as part of the EGM. Now, my question, in the 55 years of annual general meetings of News Corporation, when were you last elected?
Mr. Maines, look, you know the corporation law in Australia. The managing director of an Australian corporation is not required to stand for election. Mr. Murdoch, through all those years, was the managing director of the News Corporation Limited, which was the name of the company at that time, and he was never required to stand for election, and you know that. Don't ask silly questions.
Arthur, it's not a silly question. The chairman of Australian companies are required to be elected. Every other Australian executive chairman of note Kerry Packer, James Packer, David Clark, Macquarie Bank, Kerry Stokes, Channel 7. Every billionaire, every prominent executive chairman in Australia is re-elected every 3 years. The exemption relates to chief executives only. When Rupert fired our former non-executive chairman in 1991, he became the executive chairman. At that point, he should have been re-elected every 3 years. And there is no other prominent executive chairman in Australia who hasn't. So my simple question is that he didn't do the right thing in Australia, and I'm simply asking a question of historical fact. Has Rupert ever been re-elected at an annual meeting of this company, whether it be News Limited up until 1979 or News Corporation since? So
he has been re-elected today.
All right, so I think from all this obfuscation, the answer is that the world's longest-serving chief executive, the most powerful businessman in the world, who's run News Corporation for 55 years, has never, ever been elected by shareholders. So we should all celebrate today. Today is history. Rupert's up for election, and congratulations. I think with your 32% of the shares, Chairman, you will get back. And I would simply say that I think you shouldn't have been so paranoid over the years to avoid election. It's terrific that we finally are having an election. As you are probably the world's oldest and longest serving CEO of a major company, are you intending to serve a full 3 year term? At any point are
Absolutely.
At any point are you considering going non-executive, which is what Frank Lowy in Australia has just done. A number of prominent executive chairs, when they reach a certain age, often before they're 76, they go non-executive. Is that a model you've looked at?
It's not my intention, but it'll be up to the board.
Okay, all right. Now, normally I would then sit down and you'd move to the next resolution. Is that how it will work today? Or in terms of any questions, I mean, shareholders might have other questions. This is a moment of history, Chairman. You're up for election. It's amazing. It's unprecedented. And other shareholders might want to ask the world's most powerful man some questions. So I presume that's the way the meeting will work.
You're very flattering, but you've made your comments and you've had your time. All right?
Yes. On this resolution, okay, well, I've got questions on some of the other director resolutions, so I'll hand back the mic and
move to the next one. No. Mr. Mann has had more than his quota, but one more.
Oh, come on, long way from Australia, Chairman. So,
I can't help that.
Just a couple more. Look, congratulations on your re-election, 99.5%. It wasn't hard. It was easy. You did it, and you got re-elected. And I think you should take great confidence from getting 99.5%. And look at the context of the dual-class shares with that background. When you faced a vote of confidence from your shareholders, you were returned with 99.5%. You don't need a gerrymander. Your record is enough. And I think that you should take on board the fact that $5 billion of worth Australian shareholders have backed my resolution, even though you've put up a unanimous board recommendation against it, with, I have to say, some pretty spurious arguments. I mean, why on earth can't
I think you've argued this enough. We know where you stand. Everybody knows where they stand when they buy News Corporation shares, or the Washington Post, or the New York Times, or a number of other companies. And,
but you're issuing the non-voting. You're issuing the non-voting to pay for the Wall Street Journal, in part. I mean, the problem is not that we don't know where you
very
stand.
Few.
The problem is that you've been issuing them with your ears pinned back since 1994. They started at 33% of the stock. Now they're 70%. I mean, are we going to finish up with 95% non-voting just to lock in the dynasty? I mean, it's just the scale of it.
Okay.
All right. Now, I've got a specific question.
No, you've had
No. John, I want a very specific question here. We are now the biggest media company, right? You just said that earlier. Our market cap is the biggest. Obviously, when we do the $15 billion buyback of Malone's stake, we'll come back. But John Prestbow is the editor of Dow Jones Indices. He's the gatekeeper who decides which companies go into the Dow Jones Index, which is the world's most exclusive club, the top 30 companies. Now, Prestbow's position is outside of the independent board, editorial, et cetera, et cetera. So it's an absolute no-brainer for us shareholders. Prestbow's got to kick Disney out of the Dow Jones 30 and put us in. I mean, if we are the biggest media company, why should Disney be in there? We now control who goes into the Dow Jones Index. You control Prestbow's position. We are the biggest media company. Get on with it. Let's get into the Dow Jones Index.
Well, the thought has occurred to us, but I can assure you that, that we will not do that.
And the last comment is that Tony Blair would make a terrific director. We've got President Eisenhower on the board. Maybe it's a pattern that defeated leaders of members of the coalition of the willing get a consolation prize on our board. So I strongly recommend Tony Blair for a board seat and a book deal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think I can now declare the meeting adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody, for your attendance. Thank you.